All right, Luke 16. I'm going to look in. The last time we studied this, we were studying the bosom. It's the Greek word kalpos. And remember, it means the upper chest area of a garment. And it had the pocket there to carry things. But it's the place where John laid his head on the bosom of Christ during the Passover Seder. And Christ laid his head on the bosom of Judas. And so, anyway, let's look and see some others. Go to Genesis 16. This is the section about where Abraham decides that he's going to get the promise through something other than his wife. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And remember, this Hagar was the daughter of a pharaoh. So, I mean, it's one of those places where he probably had 100 daughters, but she was still a fairly prominent woman. And Sarai said unto Abraham, "Behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her." And Abraham hearkened to the voice of Sarah. I love that phrase. And Sarah, Abraham's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abraham had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband, Abraham, to be his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai said unto Abram, "My wrong be upon thee. I gave my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee." But Abram said unto Sarah, "Behold, the maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee." And when Sarah dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. So anyway, the point of it is, in the word bosom here, Sarah said unto Abram, "My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom." In other words, well, you know what it means. And let's see a couple more. Go to Exodus 4.
No, this is all to fulfill the promise.
Huh?
This is all to fulfill the promise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they both of them were now nearing 90, probably.
Yeah.
And Sarah's womb was barren, so that's why Sarah, did that to fulfill the promise.
Yeah, so it's the lesson. Kind of there is, you know, waiting on God gets to be where you just don't want to do it anymore.
Right. Remember, first, what he did first is he said that Eliezer was going to be the promise would come through Eliezer, and then that didn't. They finally disabused themselves of that idea. And then it's Sarah here first who says, "Well, let's get the promise so good through Hagar."
Yeah.
So
must have had a lot of conversations.
sure. All right, Exodus 4. Exodus 3 is the burning bush and the call of Moses.
That's a dumb question. I've forgotten the significance of the burning bush. I've forgotten that.
Well, let's look at it. Go back over to 3. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of the Midianite, of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, but the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. And he said, Draw not near or nigh hither, put off thy shoes from thy feet, for the place whereupon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, and the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people, which are in Egypt, and heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I'm come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, bring them up out of that land unto a good and large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. So again, we have this is the first time the declaration is made that he is going to overcome the seven tribes of Canaan. Effectively kill every man, woman, and child.
You know what's interesting is this went on 400 years.
Huh?
This went on 400 years. Israelites in captivity. What are they doing?
What's God doing?
Yeah. Man's down here flailing and suffering and getting beat up and all that. And it's his people, and it takes 400 years before he responds.
Well, it wasn't quite that, but remember, there was a long time when Joseph, the heirs of Joseph, were the pharaohs.
Yeah.
So they were treated great.
During the same time.
Yeah. But the pharaoh arose who knew not Joseph. And that's when the Hyksos dynasty was for most of the 400 years that the Hyksos were the seed of Joseph. So they lived very well. Became very wealthy. There were two exoduses. The first exodus was right immediately when the Pharaoh arose who knew not Joseph. And that point the rich left with their money in. And they migrated mostly there's a lot of people that believe that they became the country of the warriors that went into Egypt. But either way, then the poor were left. And that's now what they're talking about. There wasn't that many years that they were being punished. So the problem, the mystery is they had to see the vanity and the emptiness of getting wealthy. And then when they reached a point, and who knows what it was, when the persecution was great, then God sent the deliverer. Okay?
Yeah, that's fine. It's just that always puzzled me why it took that time frame before the response. But I'm sure, like you say, there was a lot going on in that 400 years, more than just.
Yeah, they were the pharaohs, and they're all of Israel was treated as the elite.
During a portion of the 400.
Almost all of it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I believe, and that's what I believe the history teaches us.
Yeah, okay. Don't have a horse in this race. It just always was confusing how God would wait that long to let this, what appears from their language here, that he let them suffer 400 years, and then he...
No.
Time to stop this.
No, they had to come to the end and see the vanity there in Egypt, which is a type of the world, that he had to see the vanity of riches.
Yeah.
They see he had the vanity of being in power.
And I know God's timing is not anywhere near mine. And,
but do you understand why they had to do that? To fulfill the type? Well, they had to be essentially the pharaohs and the leaders, the prominent.
I never focused on that part.
Well, I know, but that's what you're saying. You still don't understand it. But what I'm saying to you, they had to experience to fulfill the type, all of the power and the riches.
Yeah.
To see if that would. Well, then when the persecution came, when the Pharaoh rose, who knew not Joseph, then the people that had any money took off. So it was only the poor. That hurt. Because that's the lesson. That's the type.
I see that.
Okay. Well, and then this whole thing goes on where Moses is arguing with God about. But anyway, let's start verse 4, chapter 42.
Did you get your question answered?
Huh?
He asked the question. I didn't know if he got an answer.
What about the burning bush?
Yeah. I just read the only reference to the burning bush.
I heard that.
Okay.
Then I went to the restroom. I might have. Did I miss something?
No, we
didn't. Just ask if your question got answered.
You read that, but I didn't fully understand the significance.
Well, the burning bush, it was just, the bush was burning a flame, but it didn't consume the bush.
Okay,
the idea is, I mean, what's the lesson there? There's a baptism of fire that's coming upon everybody, but this is this probably has a million different types, but...
So a baptism of fire that basically kills you, intellectually or emotionally.
No.
Okay.
It was a burning bush to get Moses' attention. But let's just leave it at that.
Fine.
All right. Moses. So God is giving him all this information about he's going to deliver the blah blah. He's going to deliver people. So here's what Moses said. in verse 4, chapter 4, verse 1. And Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. And the Lord said unto him, what is that in thine hand? And he said, a rod. And he said, cast it to the ground. He cast it to the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from before it. And the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thine hand, and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand, and caught it by the tail, and it became a rod in his hand. And that they may believe the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, hath appeared unto thee. And the Lord said furthermore unto him, put now thine hand into thy bosom. And put his hand into his bosom. When we took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow. And he said, put thine hand into thy bosom again. And he put his hand into the bosom again and plucked it out of his bosom. And behold, it was turned again as his other flesh. And then he goes on, and it came to pass, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign. Anyway, it goes on and on. But the point is, the mystery is, as he put his hand into the bosom of his garment, pulled it out, and it was leprous. And God simply said, put your hand into the bosom, or and it took it out, it was clean. It was not leprous. It was like, no, what's the lesson? It's all about where you're going to take the bosom and what mindset. God was showing him something. All right, but we could go on and on about that. Let's go to Job 31. Job 31. Well, this is all of 31 is about Job claiming his righteousness, our integrity. So anyway, but let's just start somewhere. I don't know. Let's start in verse 24. If I have made gold my hope, or have said to the fine gold, thou art my confidence, if I rejoice because my wealth was great and bound, and because mine hand had gotten much, if I beheld the sun when it shined, or the moon walking in night brightness, and my heart hath been secretly enticed, or my mouth has kissed my hand, this also were an iniquity to be punished by the judge. For I should have denied the God that is above. And I would have. If I rejoiced in the destruction of him that hated me, or lifted up myself when evil found him, neither have I suffered my mouth to sin by wishing a curse to his soul. If the men of thy tabernacle said not, or that, oh, that we had of his flesh, we cannot be satisfied. The stranger did not lodge in the street, but I opened the doors to the traveler. If I covered my transgression as Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, then he's, well, it goes on. Hiding the iniquity in my bosom, did I fear a great multitude, or did the contempt of families terrify me, that I kept silence and went not out the door? Oh, that one would hear me. Behold, my desire is that the Almighty would answer me. So anyway, he's going down and he's saying, if I hid my iniquity in my bosom, as Adam did. Now, what did how did iniquity how did that happen in Adam? He hid the iniquity in his bosom because he fled from the presence of the Lord. And when the Lord said, I was naked and ashamed, then that incredible statement, who told you you were naked? So to hide iniquity in your bosom, you get the idea. All right? Everybody understand that?
Yeah, it makes me think about God is our covering. And we know that. There is no shame. There's no iniquity in His, under His covering.
Well, if there's integrity, if you're the same outside as inside as you're outside, that's what this whole section was about. That's why confession is so incredible.
Is it all about pride? Pride?
Well, I don't know what that means, but
we'll move on. I'm flunking this one.
All right. Let's go to Proverbs 6. Verse 20. My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee, and when thou sleepest, it shall keep thee, and when thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light. And reproofs of instruction are the way of life, to keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. Lust not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be burned?
You probably know that. And the answer is,
so that he goeth to his neighbor's wife, whosoever touches her shall not be innocent. Now the point here is, what is it? If you hide fire, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Again, it's the idea of hiding. That there is things going on internally that are never confessed outwardly. Again, that's what the Seder is about. So there's always openness, there's always confession. Well, I've asked God to forgive me, but that's not the point. The point is confessing. And that's the purpose of the Seder. Everybody understand that? If that isn't happen, if that doesn't happen, there's no Seder. Because remember, it's the sin offering you've accepted. Hopefully, that you are the evil one. The sin offering is for who you are. The trespass offering is for what you do. Now, the trespass offering was public. The sin or the trespass was confessed. But we go around, we've got this modern Christianity, we go around and we confess our sins to a somebody we never even seen in the Catholicism, but at least it's confessed in front of a person. What we do is we say, "Father, forgive me." But it's not about you, it's about us. Amen? What? You're doing something, Garrett.
Oh, your declarations always set me on edge.
Which declaration set you on edge now?
No, if there's no this, there's no that confession. I'm thinking about our Seder and confession. Now, there's really not a lot of confession. There is confession that's probably going on, and I don't even realize it's happening.
Oh, well, you know it if it's confession.
Maybe, maybe not.
How would you not know it? It's confessed.
Because the atmosphere is such that people just say things that might be confessions, and I don't even, there's not this aura of, oh my God, here comes some deep, dark secret or something. So.
Well, that's the aura. The aura is, no, that's not, that doesn't cut it.
Well, what happens in your Seder?
We're not a Seder. But it happens.
There's no confession.
Yes, there is confession, but it's still not a Seder. There's not 10, but there's still confession. And sometimes that causes people to leave. But that's the whole point of the Seder. So it's not me, it's us.
We always have
that's not confession.
That's
a different thing.
That's kind of formal.
I'm talking about it was 3 times a week they met.
What?
And the reason they met that often is because the trespasses are always taking place. And that's what made the Seders, they're in many ways, they're better in a soap opera, but that's what they should be. They should be exciting. What?
That was my confession.
Well, it's a good one, but it doesn't happen. Then let's change it. Change the Seder. You understand it's not a Seder if there's no confession?
No, I don't. See, that's your declaration that now we don't have any Seders in the box because nobody's confessing. So, what are we doing here? The Seder.
What do we do? We say, "Father, forgive me," and then and say it to the people.
Do you see it happening?
What?
Do you see it happening?
I don't know.
I mean,
what your question is.
You're making such a broad statement that if this is not happening, there's nothing.
No, I didn't say that. I said it's not a Seder. It's not a true Seder.
It's not a Seder.
I hope it's on the way to becoming a Seder. It's not nothing. It's on its way, prayer, hopefully and prayerfully, to becoming a true Seder. Where there's nothing hidden, where there's openness and integrity and forgiveness. And it's constant.
There's another one. And it's constant, well, then we don't have a Seder.
Then you're working to have one. It's not nothing.
Okay, well that's when you make those declarations, if this, then that, that's what I hear you saying.
Well, good, because it causes a response.
You got it, yeah. We're good.
All right, good now?
Are you good?
I'm good, as long as there's a confession in the Seders.
Well, in our Seder, we have confession at times, but the depth of them are not always that deep.
Well, this is something.
How many this layers is of the onion you want to peel away. You know?
Do you have any response? Agree? Which don't you agree?
I don't know.
All right.
What do you want?
Well, I want responses. I don't want this to be this isn't a monologue. If it's a monologue, we might as well quit. Did we ever get to? Yeah, we got Roberts, didn't we?
Yeah, we're getting overtime, but let's.
All right. We still got a couple more bosoms.
A couple more bosoms. We need to meet this morning. Ronnie on his deathbed.
Well,
the hospital has called the family in.
Take it, big guy.
For that very purpose.
Well, here's what I remember. We talked about it the other morning. You and I and John should go.
And we could do that probably today, maybe. I don't know what John's situation is. But we don't have a lot of time.
I know. That's why
so,
I think we that's I was waiting for a response whether or not you talked to John.
Yeah, I would like to have done it yesterday. It didn't work. But it.
Well, I'm ready anytime.
Okay. I'll call John.
That's, I mean, that's not the only ones that can go see him, but I think it's important that the three of us
go
see him.
Good, yeah. But do we need to meet this morning?
I have no meeting.
No meeting.